Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the programme, a look ahead at the Union Budget. Now, there are signs of the economy coming around slowly, but when will we truly be back on a growth path? And most importantly, an equitable growth path. We have a wonderful panel from the Confederation of Indian Industry today on NDTV. To look at this today, we'll be joined by TV Narendra, the CEO and MD of Tata Steel. We're also joined by Dr. Naushad Forbes, the co-chairman of Forbes Marshall Private Limited, and Chandrajit Banerjee, the Director General of the CII. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. Mr. Banerjee, let me come to you first. Now, yesterday, the IMF positively revised its estimate of contraction in India's growth rate from 10.3 to 8% in 2020. And for 2021, they've projected a growth rate of 11.5%, suggesting India will be the only major economy to register a double-digit growth this year. Now, that's great news. But on the other hand, the economic loss due to COVID is estimated at up to 20 lakh crores. So the question is this: are the green shoots in the economy strong enough now to start seriously overcoming the impact of COVID?
Well, yes, you know, there are signs of that some of the companies, some of the parts of the economy, some of the sectors are showing definitely very strong and positive signs. But we need to nurture them so that this can, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, how can this be equitable? So today what we see is what we really look forward to seeing, therefore, in the budget is really something like the pandemic economics are really at play. And the government's management of the pandemic, if one can say, has led to an expectation of what RBI has termed as a good summer. And the advanced estimates are also pegged at about 0.6% positive growth for the second half of the year. And you talked about the IMF. So, and the three tranches of the Atmanirbhar Bharat package that we have seen throughout the last year, they have actually been, if I can say, quite well received. And if we include the RBI liquidity measures, the stimulus comes close to about rupees 30 lakh crores, which is about 15% of the GDP, which really has helped contain quite a bit of the crisis. And besides the major reforms, such as the MSME redefinition or disinvestments that we have seen, and opening up of the nuclear energy, space, power, and other sectors, those were announced, and that's really helped. What we are seeing is a multi-speed recovery. Call it K-shaped or U-shaped or reverse L-shaped. In fact, it's impacting different sectors of the economy in various different ways. And what we really now need is the vaccine for the economy. This is not just a single jab, but a booster shot that will bring in the new energy.
Many doses. All right. Mr. Banerjee, Dr. Naushad Forbes, let me ask you this. The turnaround has come on the back, in the economy, has come on the back of better than expected corporate profits. Now, the flip side is lower wage costs and what is being called the K-shaped recovery. Mr. Banerjee just referred to that, which essentially implies the rich getting richer while the fortunes of the poor and the middle class have fallen. At the apex of both infrastructure and job creation, if you were to look ahead, what would be some of your key recommendations?
So, you know, I think the recovery that we've seen, the numbers that have come out from the IMF are indeed encouraging. We should keep in mind that the 11.5% recovery of in 2021 is on the back of minus 8% in 2020. So at the end of 2021, we will be maybe 2% up overall on a two-year period. So I think that context should be kept in mind. As you pointed out, the Q2 numbers, particularly for corporate profits that we've seen, showed substantial increases in profit with actually a decrease in sales. And that substantial increase in profits happened by cutting substantially back on expenses and including wages. I'm troubled by that because in the long run, consumption has been driving 60% of our overall economic growth in the country. And for consumption to continue to be the engine of the economy, that means that wage growth has to be robust and creation of employment has to be robust. What we've seen in these last 10 months is a reduction in employment,
how do you turn employment around? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that there are things that the government can directly do, and I'm not expecting anything specific in the budget that would try to address employment directly.
Right.
But I do expect things in the budget that will influence economic activity directly, and through the economic activity, we should then start seeing substantial employment growth going ahead. But I think it will depend on getting back to well above the level that we were at a year ago. And at present, that's all we're forecasting.
Right.
We're forecasting, even with the higher 11.5% growth rate, that we'll be 2% up on where we were 2 years ago. That's not enough.
Mr. Banerjee, sentiment is so important, particularly at this time of the year, just ahead of the budget, during the budget. In your assessment, is there a concern that the appetite for reforms may have reduced after the protest that we've been seeing against farm laws, which many see as much-needed reforms? Could that have been handled differently? And in terms of sentiment towards reform, is that something which affects perhaps other sectors?
So I would think that, yes, of course, it's sad to see that's one very important reform, the agri reforms, is facing the type of headwinds that it is. But yes, of course, the country needs to go ahead with reforms. And if we are going to look forward to this budget in terms of a budget which will be something like the 1991 or a 1997 budget, we would really need to see that the government's commitment towards reform is continued, be it in the areas of ease of doing business, or be it land, or be it in the areas of labor. So I think there are important areas of reforms that one would like to see. But in the context of the times, I would think that there would have to be a phenomenal reforms even seen in areas like healthcare. And we expect a huge push from the government on the sector to really make it towards a 3% type of a spend over 3 years. And it's very important to see that the government continues its reforms, even in areas like the financial sector. The financial sector's reforms will indeed be very critical to the overall health of the economy. So if we do any changes from that, it would not be the right signal to the rest of the world. And it is said that an economy is lubricated by the flow of funds, and NPAs are like clogged arteries and would be and it would be expected to increase in the coming fiscal year. So we'd like to see the unclogging of the financial system. We expect a strong push to the bond markets. Then again, also if we really look at we would need to continue even with the fiscal management of the government. So there is a whole lot of reforms which the government would need to pursue, and we would like to see them coming very strong in this coming budget.
Okay. Mr. Narendran, now a Nomura study, it's slightly old, I think end of 2019, said that 56 companies that relocated their production out of China between April 2018 and August 2019, most of them relocated to Vietnam, Taiwan and Thailand. Only two at that stage came to India, even though we have a very large domestic market. What can India do to bring investments from global corporations, even in this scenario, as we try and get out of COVID?
So firstly, we need to obviously leverage better the fact that we have a large domestic market. Secondly, we need to be conscious of the fact that there are a number of issues for us to resolve to make it easier for manufacturing to come up in terms of the costs outside the factory gate, the time it takes for clearances. While a lot of good work has been done on improving the ease of doing business, a lot more needs to be done on the cost of doing business. And I think the government obviously is working on it, but schemes like the PLI scheme gives that impetus to investors who are looking at India as a place to invest in. And I think we should certainly leverage the potential of a domestic market. And for most manufacturing companies, you can get enough scale in catering to the Indian market. And I think the government is moving in the right direction. We should build to scale in India. The market affords us that opportunity. And then, of course, once you build to scale and have addressed competitiveness, then you can export to the global markets. Auto industry is a great example of how manufacturing has been successful in India over the last 30 years.
Yep. Dr. Forbes, India's fiscal deficit is estimated to be about 7.5% of the GDP for the current fiscal. That's more than double the 2020 budget target. Now, the CIA budget memorandum is stressed for a need to see the fiscal deficit from a long-term perspective, up to even 4 years, not certainly not 1 year. So what measures would you suggest that the government keep in mind while making a roadmap to fiscal consolidation?
So, you know, the reason for the increase in the deficit is not because the government overboard in spending. It's because revenues have contracted as a result of the overall economic contraction that we've seen this year. So I think that's the starting point for this adjustment that we need to see in the fiscal deficit roadmap over a period of time and not all in 1 year. We will see revenues recover substantially next year as the economy recovers substantially. And together with that, then we can start addressing the deficit. What we've recommended is indeed, as you said, this adjustment period over the next 4 years. There are opportunities to reduce the deficit, for example, through disinvestment. We've not seen any progress on disinvestment this year. Now, yes, one could argue that we've been diverted, as a result of dealing with the pandemic, but we need to get divestment back on track in a very substantive way. The last budget, for example, talked about listing of LIC. That was intended to raise a very large amount, I think it 1 lakh crore roughly. Mm-hmm. That's not happened. Again, something that we should see a direct, clear roadmap ahead of us. And I think we need to, in divestment, go well beyond just divesting a certain amount of a government holding and selling it to another public sector company. We need to actually go for privatization and see that the share that the state owns in companies drops below 51%. The moment it drops below 51%, the chances are that the value of those shares will take off.
Right.
And when that takes off, then it should encourage more divestment at much more attractive valuation.
Yeah. Mr. Narendran, how should public investment in infrastructure be prioritized to at least 1% of GDP? I mean, is that a view you share?
Yeah, I do, because infrastructure has a multiplier effect. Infrastructure creates demand. Infrastructure also addresses the costs, inefficiencies that are there, as I said, outside the factory gates. Secondly, infrastructure also needs to be balanced between urban infrastructure and rural infrastructure. And I think the government is doing that. We saw the rural economy recovering faster than the urban economy in the initial days after the pandemic, after the lockdowns. So I think there is a need to focus on infrastructure. Infrastructure also has a positive impact on construction, which again employs a large number of people, both in the informal sector as well as the migrant workers. So in multiple ways, a focus on infrastructure helps the economy. And India has traditionally had consumption-led growth. And I think while I know there is a concern on the fiscal deficit, I think we need to shift more and more into a fixed asset-led, investment-led growth.
Okay. Mr. Banerjee, last year we saw these very extensive Supreme Court proceedings on Vodafone. Now, to encourage private investment, how is it absolutely critical to ensure a stable tax regime while ensuring that government contracts have a certain sanctity, one that's acceptable across the board?
A couple of things that come in the way of India really going into the top bracket of ease of doing business is what you just said, a stable tax regime and also a very strong contract enforcement. And we have seen here that some of the states especially deviate very strongly from that. So it is extremely important that we have, along with a sort of a stable interest rate, a stable taxation is extremely important for investments to really bounce back and that animal spirits to really kick in. And as soon as capacity utilization reaches 75%, we will see investments pretty much coming back with the background of a very strong, a stable sort of a tax regime. It's very important at this point in time for India to show to the world both in terms of ease of doing business. Lots have been done, but the next phase is going to be important. And here one sees a lot of play between both the center and also the states, because when we really talk about contract enforcement, etc., a lot of it has got to do with the state level practices, and the entire ecosystem of ease of doing business, as you know, has a lot to do with the state government. So I would really expect that the next level of focus in facts of reforms is really focused on it. You don't expect major changes in the tax anymore. Yeah. We are reaching a level where you don't really look at the rates of taxation to be the major, but the principles of taxation, the stability of taxation, those are areas which one would need adequate focus on, and that's what the government would have to really project to the rest of the world.
Dr. Forbes, how are non-performing assets, high NPAs in India, affecting the credit cycle, which I would assume has been exacerbated greatly during this COVID period? Is this something that's pulling us down? Is there a way out?
So, I think what we've seen is relatively little take up of the one-time adjustment programs that were provided for by the RBI. It's been quite modest for the infrastructure and real estate sectors, for the stress sectors, including travel and tourism. And it would be good to understand why the take-up has been as modest as it has been. Is it that the actual stress levels in those sectors was not as high as we first thought?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it that the conditions involved in taking up those the one-time adjustment was not something that could be accepted? Because I think that kind of movement forward is what we need to see a lot more of. If you look at NPAs themselves, the concern is what's going to happen with smaller loans that are actually in the market? Will we see an increase in NPAs for smaller companies and an increase in NPAs for individuals who've borrowed?
Yep.
Those are the areas where the concerns are. I'm not entirely sure what one can actually do about that beyond what has already been done. You know, to have these moratoriums, to have the loan guarantee program for the MSME sector, these are the moves that were taken. They were very welcome, and they were essential for a period of time when you're going through that kind of a trough.
Sure.
But once you're coming out of it, I'm not sure that you can really look for very much more that can happen. What I would like to see is more rapid movement on the larger NPAs of the banking system.
Yeah.
The recognition of NPAs has been suspended, in the course of this year. When that suspension ends, as it must at some point in time, then what happens? How does that all then feed into the balance sheet of the banks? What impact does that have on their own ratios?
Yes.
And how will that all play out? That's a question that I think many people in the financial sector are quite concerned about. That's one of the reasons why there's been a lot of discussion around a bad bank as an institutional way of addressing the NPA issue.
Mr. Narendran, 57 PSU listed companies, excluding those in the banking and financial sector, have an average market cap of more than 10 lakh crores. Now, the government, the CIS study says, could target about 30% of these holdings to raise resources, which could be around 2 lakh crores over just the next 2 years. Should these funds be available, perhaps being channelized for funding public infrastructure?
Yes, certainly. I think it's not just privatization, but I think a lot of the assets can get monetized. If you look at many of the PSU companies, they have a lot of land. If you look at the government itself, there are a lot of assets in prime parts of town which can get monetized. So I think there is a great opportunity to look at how can we unlock a lot of capital which is tied in government assets. It could be through divestments or it could be just monetization of some of those assets. So there's a great opportunity there. And I think if there is a positive sentiment, not today, but generally there's a positive sentiment in the stock markets, I think that's an opportunity. And there's a lot of liquidity out there globally, which is also looking for investment opportunities. So I think we should capitalize on that.
So, Mr. Narendran, a sort of linked question. Should the government work towards asset monetization of existing government infrastructure, such as NHAI, the Power Grid Corporation, the Airports Authority, transmission utilities, again to raise funds which would again be directed towards infrastructure?
Absolutely, because I think globally there are a lot of funds looking for long-term investments.
Right.
I think the government in the past has talked about it. How can we tap into that? And if you really look at interest rates globally, they are very low. And if we get the policy right, stability in terms of policy, CB talked about the fact that we need to honor contracts, not just at the center, but at the state levels, give the confidence for that. I think there's a great opportunity to attract long-term capital into India.
One final question to Mr. Banerjee. You know, we face an unprecedented situation on our frontiers. I'm talking about China. The instability that causes has a profound impact on our economy as well. It's bound to. The defense budget as a percentage of our GDP has been shrinking each and every year. And yet we face these monumental problems. And yet we want to encourage growth, and we've got finite resources to do that. Should we as a country be prepared for a substantial increase in our defense budget as a percentage of our GDP to allow capital acquisitions to take place? And if we are to allow this, would this have a concomitant impact on other areas where we would have liked to have spent more funds, for example, infrastructure?
So a very important point. And I think today, as we look at some of the priorities that of the economy, one of the most important, I would rate defense as one of the five priority areas that where we would really need to look at spending. I mean, infrastructure is something that we keep talking about. Healthcare, we keep talking about. Education is something that we have talked about. Sustainability is one, and defense is one more that I would really like to put in. And this would be this would also entail a lot that can happen both in terms of creating manufacturing capacity in the country and over a period of time. And I think already the government has shown very strong signals of procurement from the domestic sector. But as we do that, we would see both giving FDI in the defense sector a very strong fillip, plus also the potential of manufacturing over here. And I would think, given the type of need that the country has today in terms of protecting its borders, we have to have a much greater outlay on defense. And I think we should be prepared for that. And I would really look forward to that even in this forthcoming budget. Yes.
Yeah. Mr. Narendran, our economic equation with China is at one level profound. There's no getting away from it. On the other hand, lots of decisions have been taken, for example, banning apps and the like. But as a steel manufacturer yourself, and as we try and encourage infrastructure development in India and with all the jobs which come with it, are there concerns about how, for example, cheap Chinese steel might be a factor going forward in our economy? Would that have some sort of impact?
It used to be a concern 3-4 years back, 2015 and 16. But I think given the global outcry against a lot of Chinese steel coming into world markets, I think they've taken a lot of actions. Firstly, they've cleaned up and closed a lot of the smaller manufacturers, the polluting manufacturers. There's far more discipline in the market. And over the last 6 months, China has actually been importing a lot more steel than they've ever done. And they're exporting less. So that's why there's a balance in the global steel markets. And I think China does see the need to have a more disciplined steel industry, focusing on the larger, cleaner players. And I'm not seeing Chinese exports of steel as a big threat going forward. I think they'll have a better balance between their consumption and production. They are also concerned about the carbon footprint that the steel industry leaves in China. So they're conscious of that. So I think that phase is behind us. To the extent that China's consumption of steel has grown very significantly this year and will continue to grow in the years ahead.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank you all very much for joining us. A wonderful CII panel looking ahead at the budget. We've tried to cover as many areas as we can. It's being looked at as the pandemic budget, Will this actually encourage the shoots that we are now seeing to actually grow further and take us back onto that high growth path? Thank you very much for being with us. Mm-hmm.